her son died under her care. You know, she was supposed to be watching her son, and he was out playing and fell into a canal and died. And ultimately, she blamed herself for that for years. And it was through an empathetic witness that she was able to begin to, you know, reassign the meaning. Ultimately, she had gotten all sorts of condolence letters. And, well, you know, someone had told her that something similar had happened. You know, she got all sorts of letters. And the night before the night she was going to kill herself, you know, she read this letter. She had a stack of condolence letters, and she read this one from a lady who had a similar situation. You know, this lady, I think, named Teresa, who she never actually was able to get back in contact with, but tried many times. This lady named Teresa, who wrote her letter, she was with her six-year-old daughter, went inside for a little bit to, like, grab the phone or something, came back out, and her daughter had gotten hit by a car and died during the 2 minutes she was inside. And so what Teresa had sent to Melissa in the letter was that, look, like, you're not a bad parent. Like, you didn't try to make this happen. This was a freak accident. Teresa was able to say some things in that letter that helped Melissa to actually, like, have hope again. And it really was that breakdown, similar to, I think, what I had, where it was just like, I think you blame yourself a lot for something, or you just lose hope in something that you initially wanted. And so that leads you to just kind of losing hope. And I think what you need is some form of, like, a shred of hope. And I think that that's what she got. And so I think that, you know, she was kind of giving up on herself. I was kind of giving up on myself. But I think you kind of have to, I mean, in the case of her and even me, a lot of it was just that an external party came and just, like, actually, like, saved space or just tried something. But I think for someone who more practically is in a dark place and just wants to get out, I think actually seeking help. It could be a friend. It could be a therapist. It could be an old high school coach. It could be an old church leader, whatever it is. I think if you just go up and just talk to someone and just literally open up and just be flat out honest, I think that in general, complete honesty and transparency, there's a concept in Alcoholics Anonymous that you're as sick as your secrets. That has a lot to do with trauma. It's just burying things, holding things in. And so I think from, like, a human growth perspective, the moment you just begin opening up about where you're at, how you're feeling, it's kind of like writing things in a journal. Once you have it out, you can actually start to look at it from a different perspective, and then you can start reshaping the meaning of it. And maybe you can even get the help of smart people to help you start rethinking it and maybe looking at it from a more of a hopeful perspective, that you're not a bad person, you're not a loser, that these are crazy things that happen, but you can do something different about it. You can look at it differently, and ultimately your life still has purpose and meaning, and you can still do something with it. I think that trauma is pretty misunderstood. Most people think that trauma is just so focused on the past. In my opinion, it's what actually trauma does to your future. Because from my perspective, your view of your own future is the greatest determinant in who you are. You know, your view of your future is what impacts you, but a lot of the research on trauma shows that it shatters your imagination towards your future and your hope in that future. And so, and that's the, you know, the crucial thing. And so when I began kind of moving forward, I began to rethink my future and start to actually commit back to the idea that I could have a future. And so that's what ultimately led me to having those types of conversations and even being willing to go through that awkwardness or going through that change process, is because I now saw a future that I actually was like, I want this. I believe that I can actually be something more. Yeah, I would say the past doesn't define the future for two reasons. One is because the past, from your perspective, at least from a psychology perspective, is just a meaning. Memory is always changing. It's always flexible. And so the version of your past that you have right now is probably different from the version of the past you had 3 or 4 years ago, even thinking about the same events. And so the past is really just a story. It's just a meaning. Yeah, there were objective events that occurred, but you have no ability to actually know what those objective events were, because we, as a, you know, from a psychology perspective, is all we can see is through our perspective, is all we can see is through our subjective lens. And so when you look, you know, anytime you learn something new, you read a book, you have a new experience, that probably informs your view of everything else. It's like you change a part, you change the whole. And so kind of breaking memory down in a really simple way, your memory is always constructed in the present. You know, who I am right now, I think about myself as an 11-year-old boy with my parents getting divorced and my father becoming a drug addict. My view of that and the meaning I assign to it, and even all of the context around those memories, is completely painted by where I'm at right now as a person. The fact that I have a great relationship with my dad, the fact that I have all this knowledge in psychology, I've got 5 kids, like all of that reshapes how I look at and interpret my past. One challenge that people have is they're not actively approaching their past as a flexible entity. And so they tend to kind of relay the same story over and over, which doesn't necessarily help. But so one reason why the past is flexible is because it's simply just a meaning. It's a story, and your memory is always changing anyways. And your memory is always constructed in the present. So Brent Slife, he's one of my favorite psychologists. He wrote a book called Time and Psychological Explanation. Freaking deep dive. You would actually love it, because I know you like diving deep into, like, thick stuff. But he basically says that, you know, a lot of people think that the past is causing the present, but the reality from a memory perspective is that the present is causing the meaning of the past. Wherever you're at in the present, that's what's determining how you view your past. And so if you learn, if you grow, if you, you know, have achievements, if you just develop healthy relationships, it will alter the meaning in the view you have towards your past. And that's something you should seek. In my opinion, if you're still viewing the past and former relationships and former experiences the same way you did 4 or 5 years ago, that says more about who you are right now than it says about your past. It says that you're not learning, you're not gaining perspective, you're not seeking greater context, you're not asking hard questions. And so for me, as an example, I had to go and ask my dad, "Dad, tell me all about your perspective of when you were a drug addict and when me and my brothers left you. Like, tell me what that was like. Tell me why you went and had those experiences. Tell me why you had made those decisions. Tell me what it felt like coming to mom's house and us slamming the door on your face." Like, that's seeking greater context and perspective. And obviously, the more context you have towards someone, you have greater empathy and compassion. And so in hearing his story, I'm like, I can kind of see what, I obviously wouldn't justify him doing it, but I can see to some reason why he did that. So that's one reason why the past is flexible, and we can obviously go into the mechanics of how to do that. But the second reason is because the past isn't what ultimately drives you. It is your future. So there's a quote from Dan Sullivan, one of my good buddies, and he says that the only way to make your present better is by making your future bigger, which is essentially a statement of perspective. But I think that one thing that's really important to realize is that your view of your own future is determined by your current level of awareness and understanding. You know, like, What futures I imagine are different from the futures I would have imagined 3 or 4 years ago, because I now am a different person. I see the world differently. I've had a lot of experiences. I've got knowledge I didn't have. I'm in a context. And so my view, even to imagine or come up with various future scenarios, is fundamentally different than my former self. And my future self will be in the same boat. My future self will imagine different futures than my current self has, because my future self has had experiences and knowledge and awareness that I just don't have. But I think, you know, based on where you're currently at as a person, what do you value most? You know, what is a future worth having? What are things that you value that would ultimately be worth spending your time on? A big aspect of that is just thinking about your future identity, your future self. I think that that's generally the place to start, is who do you want to be? What do you want your circumstances to be? What do you want to be doing? What do you value? Like, where do you want to be in the future? I think just imagining where you want to be, who you want to be, and what you want to be doing that's hopefully valuable, that's worth working towards or worth creating. I think that that's the first step, is ultimately thinking about your future self, the person you want to be, the situation you want to have, and ultimately what you want to be doing that you can't do at this present moment for one reason or another. And so I think thinking about what's your next step, like, if you're, what's the thing you want most right now? So like, if you're someone who's single that really wants to be married, like, well, what, you know, what is the ultimate thing you want right now that would reflect your future self at a much higher level than you're at right now? So like, for me, as an example, when I was in undergrad and I was studying psychology, like, my next level future self was me as a PhD student really diving into psychology. Once I got there, like, I really, really wanted to be a professional author. And so, like, I think from a more practical standpoint, like, what is the next level future self that, like, really excites you? You know, like, what's, you know, it could be getting married, or it could be starting that business or having your business be successful, or it could be getting that book deal, could be being in elite shape so that you're doing like those Ironmans, whatever it is you want. Like, what is that next version of you that's the thing that you really, really want? And then ultimately you can create a process to getting to there. But I think just thinking about what's you at that next step, which is obviously maybe a quantum leap or a next level up of your current self and what you really want. The gap and the gain is basically an idea that if you're always measuring yourself against your ideal, you're always going to feel this gap between you and where, you know, whatever your ideal is, and that's going to make you feel unhappy. Whereas if you measure yourself against your former self, where you were before, you'll see progress. You know, there's a quote from Ernest Hemingway. And Ernest Hemingway, the author, the novelist, said that nobility is not about being superior to your fellow man. True nobility is about being superior to your former self. So as an example, I have some really good friends of mine. They're in like their 40s. They've got, you know, some kids and stuff, and they've had serious financial issues during COVID, where he's like lost his job. She's gone through like this identity crisis, and they're kind of freaked out because they've got kids and they're like, what the heck do we do? And I just asked them, you know, look at where you were like 3 or 4 months ago. Like, have you made any progress in the last 4 months towards getting yourself into a better financial situation? Is your relationship with each other better? Like, where are you at versus your, where you were 4 months ago? And they're like, oh yeah, we're in a much better situation. You know, like, we've made big progress. And that's reflecting on the gain of where you were versus where you're at right now. And that gives you a little sense of confidence and movement, you know? So I think that that's, I think it's a good practice wherever you're at, whether you've made big success or whether you're small, is to actually like look at the progress that you've actually made. And I think that that really helps you to feel like it actually increases your hope. So it's looking at the good, focusing on the good, and saying, what can you do now because of that?